We will reconvene. We will reconvene and we'll go to item six, scoping meeting, 2012 triennial review of the water quality control plan for the Lahontan region.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members, and members of the audience. My name is Richard Booth. I am the supervisor of the TMDL Basin Planning Unit. And I'm here today to talk about this scoping meeting we're hosting for the 2012 triennial review. And I'll bend down and talk into the microphone here. There you go. Thank you. Perfect. Thank you for that technical support. I'm going to take about 20 minutes or so to explain what a triennial review is, why we need one, how each of these 21 proposed projects have come to be on this list. We're going to discuss projects that are committed and what that means. The goal here is to eventually prioritize the projects, but that prioritization scheme will not be asked of you until January of 2013. At this meeting, there is no board action. And you may hear from other interested parties after my presentation. I understand at least two folks will speak. The triennial review is a process. It's required by state and federal law to update basin plans. It involves prioritizing a list of topics of what I will call projects that you, the board, direct your staff to work on. There's not enough funding to work on all of the possible basin planning projects. Hence the need for a prioritization. Bullet number two on my slide, there are currently 21 proposed projects that have the potential to amend the basin plan. As a result of scoping meetings and comments that we receive, some of the projects may be dropped, we may have some projects added. But for the ones that we know of now, I will briefly introduce each of those projects. I will not go into detail for these projects, only to introduce them. Bullet number three, some projects are already underway. Some are nearing completion, and some are required as part of the basin planning program, and some are required by state board as a policy. I will point these out, these particular projects, and I will recommend that you adopt these projects or that you retain them on the priority list that board staff will work on during the next 3 years. And the next 3 years is the period that started last July 1st. Bullet number four, as I will explain later, there is enough staff funding to complete the committed projects, but not near enough funding to work on all of the uncommitted projects. Nonetheless, our goal is for you to prioritize, based on staff's recommendations, the list of projects so that staff will have direction on which projects to work on. This is important because we may receive more funding, or there may be alternate means of technical help that we could receive from project proponents. We may complete some of these projects with less funds than I've anticipated here, and some of these projects may be delayed into the next triennial period. This prioritization process is important enough that we are holding this scoping meeting today, and we're holding another scoping meeting in South Lake Tahoe at the board meeting in October. The comment period that we requested folks to comment on ends October 19th after the second scoping meeting. We will then present the recommended priority list to you at our January 2013 meeting, which I understand is back here in Barstow, for your adoption, for your consideration. That's the ultimate goal of this process. You are not asked to take action today. You may express your opinion or you may provide direction, but it is not required. And please feel free to interrupt at any time during this process. This is more of a workshop format, not a formal presentation. I'll be glad to discuss any of these if you have some questions. And finally, you may hear from the public. And like I said, I know of at least two folks that want to speak to you on some of these topics. Before I launch into the list, do you have any questions? Very well. There's a late revision I want to point out. I think has been handed to you. Originally, when the package went out first, we thought we had 11.7 PYs to work on these basin plan amendments. In fact, we only have 5.7. We had combined the funding that due to work on other basin projects, but not basin plan amendment projects. The projects I'm presenting to you today will ultimately result in amending the basin plan. The full funding we have to work on basin plan projects include things like the Lake Tahoe TMDL implementation. It includes TMDL implementation for other TMDLs that we have. And I had inadvertently included that in this package. That is not correct. We really have 5.7 PYs to work on these projects, and I'll elaborate on that much further on our last slide. I'm going to refer you to Bates page numbers in your package to help you follow along with this, because I understand that the font on this slide is pretty small for this screen. And I also have included a table handout for those of you in the audience. I think there's one or two remaining that shows some more description of this different topics. So I'm going to launch into these first seven projects that I call the committed projects. These are the ones that we're already working on or that are required by state board. I'm going to very briefly mention each one. The first one, you'll see more information on your page 6-19, and it deals with prohibition amendments. This was on the board's 2009 triennial review list. We're currently working on it, and in fact, we're nearing completion with this project. We expect to have a set of amendments before you study center. I'm also going to try to remember to give you an idea of the magnitude of each of these amendments should they go forward. For example, if they're specific to just one water body, I'll point that out. If they're indications of work that would apply to the entire region, I'll point that out so you have some idea of what kind of magnitude these amendments would have throughout our region. The prohibition amendments primarily are Tahoe Basin and the Truckee Watershed, but there are some amendments that will apply to the whole region. Program manager, that is currently me managing the program for basin planning. That magnitude you can dispute or argue as much as you want, but it has to do with the whole program. We need to reserve some time for the 2015 triennial review. We are 3 years during the same process. On Bates stamp 619, I mentioned a topic called miscellaneous work that will not directly result in basin plan amendments. This is part of the program management. There's all kinds of work that we do in supporting this whole program that needs to be done that doesn't necessarily result in a basin plan amendment. I think all of you who work in organizations understand that phone calls, answering the phone calls, answering comments are all part of the process. Page 6-20, incorporate State Water Board Wastewater Treatment Policy. This is known as the Septic Systems Policy into the basin plan. This is a required policy that the State Board has adopted. It is required to be in our basin plan, and we need to allot some time and effort to incorporate that into our basin plan. It may involve some changes to our basin plan, or we may incorporate it just as an appendix. I am assuming there's going to be some time involved on Water Board staff to incorporate this policy into our regional basin plan. That's why I've allotted one full PY for this. Keep in mind, PY, which I mean by person years, is to be allotted over the entire 3-year period. In other words, that's not one PY per year. That is one PY over 3 years to incorporate, for example, this septic policy into our basin plan. Okay, on your Bates stamp 6-20, there's a topic known as removing the municipal beneficial use designation from two groundwater basins at China Lake Naval Air Weapons Station. That was on your 2009 triennial review list. We are continuing to work on that. I'd like to spend a little bit of time explaining the progress we've made on that and why that one's important. First, I want to clarify perhaps a misconception that might be in your package. I'd like to draw your attention to Bates stamp page 6-32. That's the last page on our agenda item 6. And on that page, topic number 10 is this very topic, removing the mune use from two groundwater basins at the China Lake Naval Air Weapons Station. The last column speaks of the status And the Senate says, after indicating in 2010 it was no longer interested in pursuing these amendments, the Navy expressed renewed interest, and they delivered some products. That's not entirely true. I think it's my understanding at the time that it wasn't certain how much technical support the Navy could provide at the time, but it's turned out that the Navy has provided quite a bit of technical support and has, in fact, done a very thorough study of the groundwater basins under consideration in what we call a technical justification report. So I just want to clarify that I don't want to leave the impression that the Navy is not interested in this topic. The Navy is very interested in this topic. And again, we've made quite a bit of progress on this topic, and I don't know if I'd say nearing completion, but certainly we can produce something for your adoption fairly soon on this topic. And then I want to point out one more item that was handed out to you along with the late revision. It's a letter from a community organization in the Ridgecrest area, which is China Lake Naval Weapons, and they're supporting the removal of municipal beneficial use. So that's, I think, an important consideration. And like I said, I think we're going to have a speaker address this topic after mine. And then finally on this slide, part of our committed projects, the ones that we really want you to do, to allow us to do, are considering changes to Lake Tahoe nearshore water quality objectives. The California legislature has expressed an interest in this, and there are other Tahoe stakeholders who have a very strong interest that we consider water quality objectives for the nearshore environment at Lake Tahoe. We've already begun work on this, and this we consider to be a very high priority project. And I had to throw a picture in my slide. I can't help that. Here's a oblique air photo of China Lake Naval Air Weapons Station, showing you that the geomorphology sits in an alluvial plain here in this valley, and the groundwater basins under consideration directly underlie the facility. And just real briefly, with what we're talking about removing the municipal use, for those of you who are not aware, the groundwater is naturally high in salinity. It's naturally high in arsenic and other metals. And it is removing immune use for the reason that it's naturally high in these constituents is the basis for our proposal. Okay, I'm going to launch now into the 14 uncommitted projects. These are the ones that we're going to have to have you prioritize once we make our recommendations for some of the remaining PYs. Frankly, as I'll get to in the last slide, but I'll give you a little preview right now, we're only talking about 1.1 PYs of staff time over 3 years to work on the rest of these 14 projects. But as small as that sounds, and you may wonder why we're even talking about all these when many of these far exceed that number, I want the board to keep in mind that some of the projects that we're talking about here may be bumped into the next triennial review period. Some of the projects we may receive funding or technical support that I don't anticipate here. And if that happens, that'll give us a chance to work on some of these other projects. So if you prioritize the list for us, and we could finish one of these off a lot sooner than we thought, we can go to the next one. So again, I'll emphasize the numbers, but please consider the fact that we could work on some of these more than what the numbers may show. Okay, adopt site-specific water quality objectives for Fish Springs. This is in the Owens Valley. This has the consequence of just specific to Fish Springs and the Owens Valley watershed. If we adopted this site-specific objectives, it would help to facilitate permitting. Similarly, for site-specific objectives for the Susan River, again, only applying to the Susan River to help us facilitate permitting there. And revising Hot Creek water quality objectives to facilitate permitting at the Hot Creek fisheries. This is a picture of the raceway ponds at the Fish Springs Hatchery. This hatchery is operated by the California Department of Fish and Game. It's near Big Pine, south of Fisher. Now, these four projects are all required or strongly hinted by state board policy. You see the first two, if you can read that slide, incorporate Antelope Valley Salt Nutrient Management Plan. Second bullet is incorporate the Mojave Basin Salt Nutrient Management Plan. I've anticipated 1PY over 3 years for both of those, keeping in mind, like you've heard today, that we may get some technical support from the project proponents. Some of this time allotted for working on these may wind up only being staff to herd the process through the basin plan amendment, and the technical review may or may not be very great. Each of these projects has their own amount of technical review staff must do, as well as the process of taking it through the amendment process. The amendment process includes scoping meetings such as this, where we solicit public input. Staff will produce a SQL equivalent document for all or most of these. So that's the staff time that I'm talking about here. And those numbers we may not need a full PY to do this project, but I wanted to give a conservative estimate for these hours. Hydro modification, this is related to a riparian protection policy that the State Board has. This is something that we may work on. There's not an immediate need for this one, but it's the idea that we disturb stream environment zones, that it's done in such a way to minimize the deleterious impacts to water quality. Establishing a policy for this or guidelines for this is something we'd like to work on. And finally, biological indicators. Right now, when we're discussing water quality, we look at chemistry. We look at, well, what's the amount of nitrate that's allowable in the water? Well, there's a very strong effort going on with State Board and others to come up with indications of the water quality based on the biota, based on, for example, macro invertebrate, the diversity of that, the types that you see in the water. It's hard to quantify. They're working on it very strongly, and that's a policy that we would like to incorporate into our basin plan once this type of biological indicator water quality objective effort is completed. There's a slide showing a nice riparian area, something very pleasant I like to hang out in. Okay, here's the last set of our 14 uncommitted projects. I will again discuss them briefly. Update Chapter 5 of the Basin Plan to reflect pending Tahoe Regional Planning Agency revisions. The TRPA is updating their regional plan. We want to be consistent with them, and I think so far we're in agreement. So there's going to be some staff time spent on making sure that we have interagency consistency with that. We have a public request for Squaw Valley groundwater withdrawal, the second item up here. There's some staff time that we would like to work on dealing with withdrawing groundwater from portions of Squaw Valley and how that affects water quality. We'd love to develop a strategy for dairies, the third point on my slide, to update the basin plan and institute a better way of regulating dairies and give a little more consistency there. Again, there's more detail on these. For example, the dairy strategy on 6-25 gives a paragraph, explains that in much more detail. Table 2.1 for the Mojave River Hydrologic Unit. That's clarifying some issues, correcting some slight inconsistencies, but we're realizing now that we may be able to incorporate that particular topic into the Prohibition Amendment. That was the first topic I discussed. So there's some time savings there that we may be able to just take care of that as a matter of course. Biological beneficial use for the Mojave River, next to the last item here. Again, that may be something we could save some time by merging with the biological indicators effort that's underway now. And finally, there's a proposal to revise Chapter 3 for the water quality objective compliance. This has to do with an evaluation of water quality in a statistical analysis using the mean of monthly means. That is an awkward and not necessarily representative way of evaluating water quality. We'd like to change that. And here's a slide showing an area of the Mojave River. This was taken from the Mojave River Fish Hatchery. It was just east of Victor Valley College campus. Oh, three more. I picked you out. Sorry. Actually, this is one topic, but we have three options. This has to do with revising our water quality objective for bacteria. You heard, did a discussion at our last board meeting in July on revising water quality objectives, and you tasked staff to come up with some options on some different ways of going about that, estimates of the time it would take, both staff time as well as time in years. And so we've sat down and scratched our head, come up with three options to present. There is a option to revise the entire region's objectives for bacteria, which currently are 20 colony-forming units per 100 milliliters of water, 20 CFU. We may revise that for the whole region. Some have suggested we make it 200 to be in line with other regions of the state. And then we could go about making site-specific bacteria objectives for different watersheds that may need a site-specific objectives, such as Bridgeport Valley. There's another option to do it in phases, to change the objective for bacteria specifically to Bridgeport Valley. I'm on the second bullet here, option two, so that the objective for Bridgeport Valley be site-specific and be 200 CFU. And then later, we change the rest of the standards for the rest of the region. And we divvy that up into two phases, like I say. We'd take half a PY to do that in 6 months to address Bridgeport Valley only, and then take phase two over 3 years of considerable amount of staff time, 5 years over 3 years, possibly even more, to deal with the rest of the region. And even though I didn't include this particular topic in the what I call the committed, I still want to emphasize that Water Board staff has done quite a bit of work on bacteria standards in our region, and quite a bit of work specifically in Bridgeport Valley. So I just want to make that clear that we're not starting from scratch on any of these options. We've been doing quite a bit of work. And finally, option three, it would be a suggestion of setting standards for Bridgeport Valley, not necessarily 200, setting a standard for Bridgeport Valley that we are in the process of evaluating now that would be appropriate for that valley. And then phase two, change the standard for the rest of the region. That's the most time-intensive option. It would take a bit of time just to come up with a standard for Bridgeport Valley if we decided not to adopt the 200. We figured it'd take 3.5 PYs over a total of 3 year period, but maybe we could get it completed in 2 years. And the phase two of that, take 3 PYs to get it completed in an additional 2 years. Here's a nice slide of the cattle in Bridgeport Valley. This picture was taken in Bridgeport Valley. I think a guest ranch there in the valley. This is my final slide. I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about some of the details of the PY, so bear with me. I appreciate your attention thus far. Okay, as I mentioned before, the only portion of our total funding for basin planning is 5.7 PYs. The amount of committed work that I explained would take an estimated 4.6 PYs. That leaves 1.1 PYs remaining to work on the uncommitted projects. But I want to emphasize, as I've said before, it's still possible to work on more projects than I've estimated here, because after all, we're talking about a three-year period. Things can change. We could get support from our folks that propose these projects more than I've anticipated. We could actually get funding. I know stranger things have happened, but it's possible to work on other projects, hence the need for the prioritization. And by the way, the list that we'll present to you will have the list of the projects we recommend you adopt. And then the prioritization scheme following that will state quite clearly, as funding becomes available, we'll work on these. So it'll be, I think, made clear that we will work on the projects as funding becomes available. And then finally, I want to say one more thing on a related matter. For those of you that are familiar with our TMDL program, now there are some TMDLs that are proposed for completion in the next 3 years. These TMDLs, for example, may be Bodie Creek. We have metals impairment in Bodie Creek. We're working on that. We have tributaries to Lake Tahoe that that are impaired with sediment as well as nitrogen, I believe, and we hope to work on that. And also we're dealing with a PCB, polychlorinated biphenyl contamination in Donner Lake as a TMDL development process. All these TMDLs, if we go forward with a TMDL and develop it, will require an amendment to the basin plan, but we will use TMDL money to make that process, not basin planning money. And that concludes my presentation. I'll be glad to entertain any questions.
Any questions from board members or staff?
Well, this is a little discouraging.
Yes.
Looking at the list of potential projects, they all look deserving. It feels like we're having to choose which child to put the oxygen mask on when the airplane goes down or something. I don't know.
It was a bumpy ride. I'm on a flight down here. That's true.
I'm just uncomfortable with this process. I don't know how these potential projects get put on the list. I don't know how they get ranked. I know that there are we hear from parties that their project is absolutely the most important. But people who feel their project is absolutely the most important may not have the view of the region in mind.
Yes.
And I was wondering if we could task the staff to come up with a think piece between now and the next board meeting that just kind of lays out criteria we could use for setting priorities among these different projects, numbers of people impacted, economic dollars at risk. I mean, I'm just throwing out ideas here.
Right.
The beneficial uses affected, whether the initial standard was just plain wrong because we have new data. We have to strike a balance between doing projects that are very site-specific and affect a very limited part of our region, and also doing ones that are really improving our basin plan region-wide. So having made that statement, I have a question about about the three options presented for Bridgeport Valley.
I do want to thank you, Dr. Horn, for that suggestion. This is exactly the type of guidance that staff seek for coming up to how to help inform you make the appropriate decisions. We'll definitely work on those.
Thank you. I'm just wondering, looking at this is a theoretical question, not specific to Bridgeport Valley, but the Bridgeport Valley case brings this question to mind, which is, in your experience, working on basic plan amendments, and maybe other staff members would like to chime in to answer this question. Is it easier to go from the general to the specific or from the specific to the general, i.e., one could argue that doing a specific basin plan amendment and going through crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's on a specific case then would shorten the time required to do a more general basin plan amendment? Or is it the other way around? I mean, I would just want to get your sense from doing this, which is the more efficient?
I will take a stab at it. I will invite other staff to put in their two cents since you asked. One of the biggest considerations I found in my relatively short life here in the Basin Planning Unit, which has been now, what, a year and a half or so, is that when we have a controversial amendment to the Basin Plan, or one where we have strong opinions by different interested parties, that tends to be the most staff-intensive and time-consuming process, because we want to make sure that we've addressed all items concerned and give that the consideration. So my off-the-cuff opinion is that would kind of trump a specific to general or a general to specific.
Okay.
Certainly, the more general of a adoption to the basin plan we make, the it would, in theory, help us to take care of that issue from now on. You know, it would be something we wouldn't have to come back and address. And the whole point of the basin plan is to be a document that has minimal changes to it, but is changed as appropriate. But I feel that's kind of a vague answer to your question and not really as specific as you need. So I'll have to leave it at that and invite other staff to speak.
Good afternoon. My name is Lori Kemper. I'm the Assistant Executive Officer for the Water Board. I think Richard did a good job in trying to answer that, and I think that, you know, the pesticide basin plan amendment is a good example of where we took a general approach to a problem for our region. And as Richard said, you do a good enough job in describing a general set of circumstances, you never need to come back and do the site specific. In other words, we made a decision consciously that we were going to produce a general sort of approach. Other regions have come up with specific pesticide objectives for individual pesticides. That's a much more involved, you know, difficult process. And then you limit yourself because you've spent all this time and energy on one or two pesticides, and then there's no pesticide developed, so you start all over again. So I think one of the challenges we have as the Lahontan region is that other places in the country have more general basin plans. They have like one nutrient number for all their water bodies, for example. Our region's basin plan was developed in the 70s based on a lot of data that was collected in the 40s and 50s, and we set site-specific numeric objectives for our rivers and streams and lakes and reservoirs, and based on very limited data. So that has put us in a situation where we now are faced with how to address that in many locations. And I think that we're uncomfortable in coming back to you and basically one option would be trying to abandon all our site-specific numeric objectives and coming up with general numeric criteria, or in the nutrient world they talk about nutrient endpoint indicators and things like that. We're not sure that's the best thing to do for some of these constituents in our region, that would not provide protection. We would be maybe going backwards, but that's something that the board probably over the next several years may need to grapple with. So I think it's difficult. You know, every project has sort of different, they don't always have to, you know, in other words, we don't have to do a general and a specific approach. We can kind of choose one or the other. But that being said, I mean, when we're talking specifically about this bacteria project, I believe that, you know, our option one, where we do a region-wide with site-specific considerations, is we use the site-specific information. We have the most detailed, most data for the Bridgeport Valley, and we use that to inform a more general approach for the rest of the region. We extrapolate the information we've learned from the ranchers in the valley on the best achievable water quality. We also use, you know, same information from our Prop 84 grant in other parts of our region, but we use that specific information to help inform a general approach so that we can do both at the same time, and I think that's the most efficient and practical way to move forward on that particular example. But, you know, I think each example is difficult, and I think the other projects that are on your list that deal with site-specific numeric objectives, those are really NPDES permit-driven issues where we have the fish hatcheries and we have Susanville Sanitary District. They're under NPDES permits where we don't think the discharges can comply with the basin plan numeric standards, and we don't think the numeric standards are needed to protect water quality and beneficial uses because the numbers were set based on a limited data set in the past, and we want to be able to permit them moving forward. So this gets into, I think, some of the things you brought up, and we can come back and talk some more about, but, you know, it's like, who is going to be upset? I mean, the challenge we have in those three cases is that you have NPDES permits that have five-year expiration dates, and the US EPA wants us to renew them, but if those permits stayed in place as is for another 5 or 10 years or 20 years, I'm not sure that there would be any harm because of the way some of them are written. Some of them, you know, like Hot Creek, just as the board faced having to issue minimum mandatory penalties, that was a very uncomfortable position. So Right. Clearly those have, you know, it's a very focuses on a very small thing going on in our region, but it does help give the discharger comfort, a permit that makes sense, and the regional board comfort so that we're either not dealing with an old permit that we're just choosing not to revise so that we don't end up in an enforcement situation, or we're in an enforcement situation that we don't want to be in. So those are, unfortunately, you know, ones we put those on the list because of those issues. Now, there are probably 1,000 locations in our region where we would like to change the objectives, but because there aren't MPDS permit issues or MMP, we have other ways to kind of deal with it at this point. So those aren't on the list. So my example. And then obviously the sub-state board has asked us to do. If we don't do it, what's going to happen? You know, if we don't incorporate the salt nutrient management funds in our basin plan, I'm not sure, you know, we know the answer there. We've put those things on there because we've been asked to. You know, they've asked us, and they would like all the regions to do that. Same with the septic system policy, but I don't know what would happen if we didn't do it.
Dr. Horn, do you have any further questions?
Mr. Smith would like to.
I just wanted to add something real quick. Doug Smith, supervising geologist. On bait stamp page 6-21, these three options are listed out in detail. And if you go to the resource needs, they all three options are quite high compared to a lot of the other ones. I mean, it seems like there's about 5 PYs. The reason for that is that each option requires scientific peer review because adopting these numbers. And that process takes anywhere from 9 months to 12 months. It just adds some time, and there is a lot of staff time. So anytime that you are having two phases, there is a possibility of doing two separate peer reviews. Although option two, you can make an argument on phase one, whether that would have to be peer reviewed or not. So we went with the not on this option at this time. So.
Let me ask one other question. How to phrase this? If you could talk a little bit about the possibility of temperature TMDLs, and I mean, I guess I'm asking for a little more explanation of the Squaw Valley groundwater withdrawal item. And, I mean, in that case, it seems to me, and maybe the temperature TMDL is a red herring on that. but we're getting everybody up, all the suits. In that case, it is a site-specific item that has broader implications throughout the whole region. So it could be a precedent-setting item, even if it is just for Squaw Valley.
Right. Richard Booth again. Absolutely, that is true. And that topic, and for that matter, several of these topics, have consequences, or they have ways of being dealt with that are perhaps different than a simple, a relatively simple basin plan amendment. What I would like now is for Chuck Curtis to answer specifically some your question on that topic for Squaw Valley. But just know that when we come to you with this list of topics, it's for basin plan amendments that if it turns out they can be addressed another way, such as through a TMDL, and we feel that's the most appropriate way, the best way to save money, the best way to get the water quality objective enhanced, we'll definitely do that.
Thank you, Richard. Chuck Curtis, supervising engineer. In addition to TMDLs that Richard identified as a way to address a basin planning issue or a standards issue, there are other means such as enforcement measures that can be brought to bear, cleanup and abatement orders, or similar, depending on the nature of the problem that a certain action might be having on water quality. Specific to Squaw Valley, we don't have temperature standards for Squaw Valley, specific for Squaw Valley water quality. We do have general temperature standards in our region, for some of our waters, I'd have to check to see if those also apply to the Truckee River watershed, which includes Squaw Creek. In Squaw Creek, the issue isn't so much water quality, although temperature, as you point out, Dr. Horn, is a water quality component, and that does affect the beneficial uses there. Really, the effect on the beneficial uses that excessive pumping in Squaw Valley may have, in that the pumping of the groundwater affects flow in the creek, and if there's no flow in the creek, then the fish in the creek don't have any beneficial use of that creek. So so that's it is an issue that I've been involved with as the Water Board's representative on the Olympic Valley Groundwater Management Plan Advisory Group. That group advises the Squaw Valley Public Service District, which is the groundwater management plan management organization for Squaw Valley groundwater, pursuant to the Department of Water Resources, and I can't remember the code, but I remember the bill AB 3030 that brought that about. So this is an issue in Squaw Valley that we as staff are aware of, and I know that Dr. Horn and some of the other board members are quite aware of. And we have funded some projects. This board has funded some projects that are supporting the data gathering effort in Squaw Valley to evaluate the effects of groundwater pumping potential alternatives for pumping in different areas or different times, and so really management of the pumping in the valley so that the effect on Squaw Creek could be minimized. So we are involved in that, this effort that that Richard has brought before you is one that there may be specific amendment to the basin plan that could come out of that. It's early to tell at this time. There may be other means, perhaps through water rights that may be brought to bear on that problem.
Yes.
I just wanted to add to that. It is true, Dr. Horn. It would be presidential for our region board to tack on that. Would be seeing more and more where water rights and water quality are intersecting, and the problems and the solutions are more complicated. So, a flow requirement for Squaw Valley is something that we have other region boards, many region boards, to do. And for it to be fruitful, as Chuck said, more work needs to be done on the water rights side because they do intersect very closely. And we have been having discussions with the state board about how best to do that and proceed. But it would be innovative for us to proceed with something like this, that's for sure.
Questions? Other board members? Peter?
I did have one question in your comments that suggesting that we could possibly do more than the 5.7 PYIs if the circumstances were to come forward where we could get some additional assistance on doing some of the work required for some of these projects. Either someone could come forward and help do some of the technical work and provide some of the technical information or help with funding or, you know, any of those kinds of things. When you array your final set of priorities, I'm wondering how you take into account the fact that someone could come along during this period of time and say, yeah, we can help bring resources to bear to this. So if someone were to bring resources to bear to priority 14, would that serve to move that higher in the priority line because it's now more feasible? I guess what I'm saying is that there needs to be, in my mind at least, a way for me to look at this and not only look at what's a priority in terms of theoretical abstract importance, but what kind of priority you can assign to the feasibility of actual completion of something. And that might change as we go through this time frame, and I would hope that that could be taken into account some way.
Absolutely, that's an excellent point, and one in which I feel is another requirement on us board staff to help you make this list prioritization scheme so that we provide you specifically with that information. If we feel that we know, or we won't know anything, but if we feel we have a possible help from a project proponent, especially in terms of technical evaluations, which are always time consuming, we'll include that in our list. We'll include that as part of the information we will provide you and how much time savings we think that would be. So that it could be, and for that matter, even make a recommendation based on the attributes that you mentioned. And I do want to clarify that just because we can get something paid for, something is cheap, that doesn't necessarily mean it's therefore something we should do. We staff don't use that as a criteria, and I recommend that you not either. But nonetheless, that information that you need to make that decision should be provided to you, and that's an excellent point, and one that which we will endeavor to include.
Just an example.
Yeah.
Chair, members of the board, a good example is, and it's good just to try to remember to be a little realistic. I mean, we are just talking about a 3-year period, and these things all take time. And so, for example, if later, you know, a year from now or 6 months from now, obviously anything we know between now and January we can include in this recommendation if someone brings to bear some sort of commitment and, you know, in a schedule or something like that. But in terms of how the board has handled this in the past, China Lake is a good example of that, where they asked to be on the list, they offered to provide support, and the way the board handled it 3 years ago was they put the project above the funding line in terms of, you know, putting it in the top priorities for 3 years, but put very few staff resources toward it, like a tenth of a PY or something, to basically to kind of, you know, continue working with China Lake folks to maybe help with crafting the kind of technical information that was needed, to maybe do some review of the information available, and provide some feedback. So that was a kind of a realistic way of acknowledging that you wanted staff to work on this effort, but realistically, the effort is time-consuming even when someone steps up and says they're going to do the work. So all I'm suggesting is that if someone offers to bring a lot of resources to the table, realistically, staff would not be prepared to bring a basin plan amendment to the board till after the 3-year, the triennial review period. So in other words, when you see us again in 3 years, if someone steps up and says they're committing to a big data collection or data evaluation project, they may land it in our laps before the end of this 3-year period, but you'd have an opportunity to reprioritize it 3 years from now in terms of action. And obviously staff, if they felt it was shovel ready, you know, and could bring it to the board, you know, Patty has the opportunity to kind of bring that to the board's attention as part of the executive officer's report and that sort of thing. But if we get like a final project and it's ready to move, but in generally speaking, these things take time and you have another chance at prioritizing it in 3 years. So.
And then I had one other observation, I guess it's not so much of a question, but and maybe it's because I've been here the least amount of time, but I'm concerned about whenever I sit here and deal with a situation where there seems to be some level of perception and acknowledgement that a standard or criteria that's contained in the plan is not appropriate to the action that the agency needs to be involved in a given situation. And it really concerns me that the provisions of the plan, when they get in the way of us actually discharging our obligations and responsibilities as an agency, I find that a really uncomfortable position to have to take. and be guided by, and I guess that's just an observation.
Duly noted. Thank you.
Mr. Diaz.
Yes, I'd just like to say that I strongly agree with Dr. Horn's recommendation that we ask staff to develop objective criteria for prioritizing the topics and projects. Unless such a system already exists, in which case maybe sometime in the future staff could present that mechanism. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Eric.
I'll add mine to trying to prioritize, but I wonder if you could address the Bridgeport bacteria study and how that would, what implications that has for a wider application, say the Tahoe Basin, other places within the region.
The concept of setting a standard of any kind region-wide without considering how there are some sites where that standard would not be appropriate, of course, is a very common thing that we have to deal with all the time. I did not get into detail for the bacteria objective, water quality objective that we're dealing with here for either Bridgeport Valley or the rest of the region. I want to throw another little kink into the matter here for you, Mr. Sandell. The US EPA, with state board help, is coming up with another bacteria standard altogether. The standard that I referred to here with this 20 coliforming unit is for fecal coliform, and there are many biologists that believe a more appropriate standard for water quality is actually to be the E. coli bacteria. And when we change it, and frankly it looks like it's coming down, it looks like we're going to wind up changing our standard. Instead of using fecal coliform, we're going to use E. coli. And from what I understand from the biology community, there's not a precise one-to-one correspondence between a fecal coliform number and an E. coli number. They're close. They're related. And you can speak in general terms of an impairment of water body. You know what a high number for E. coli is, and you know what a high number is for fecal coliform. But it's the transition is, I guess I'm trying to say, the transition will require some work. So in the process of an E. coli standard possibility, that would still be a factor that we'd have to look at site-specific, look at specific water bodies to see the appropriateness of that, not to mention the fact that we would want to know what the source of the bacteria is in the first place. Is it from livestock? Is it from wild animals? That sort of thing. So I don't know if I'm getting to your to the answer to your question, but I'm trying to point out different aspects that we have to consider.
No,
is that okay?
Yeah.
I do support what Dr. Horn said. We need a matrix for our next board meeting, prioritization, and so I am in support. I think it's a wonderful idea. Dr. Horn had a follow-up question.
Thank you, Chair. As Mr. Pumphrey was speaking, I wondered whether, to follow on his point, would it be possible to put elements of this on our list of potential supplemental environmental projects? There's probably a simple yes or no.
Yeah.
Explain why. It's so
I would like to
obviously rational.
I would like to refer to the obviously rational enforcement and prosecutorial team member.
These supplemental environmental policy does not allow a SEP project to benefit the board.
Yes, but there must be a way to craft some of these in a way that it would not necessarily benefit the board.
And potentially there is. There could be identified.
Let's be creative.
A data gathering effort that might be appropriate, that might have broad use, that the board could also used to support its basin plan amendment. So something like that could happen.
Go for it.
Any other questions of staff? I have two speaker cards here.
Okay. I want to thank the board for your attention to this matter and your excellent guidance. This is exactly what we're looking for. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll go first to James McDonald.
Chair, member of the board, appreciate the opportunity to speak here. I am James McDonald. I work for the Navy at Naval Air Weapons Station in China Lake. I'm an environmental engineer there. One of my main duties is the cleanup of the hazardous waste sites under the installation restoration program. If you don't mind, I'd like to introduce a few other representatives of the Navy here as well. I'll be the only one speaking, but they're a major part of the program here. So we have Michael Bloom, who is with the Naval Facilities Engineering Command in San Diego. He's the lead remedial project manager. Marie Dreyer, also with the Naval Facilities Engineering Command as a remedial project manager. Kathy Munz is a geologist with Tetra Tech and the main author of our technical justification report. And Mike Stoner is a geologist also with the Naval Air Weapons Station at China Lake, the manager of our drinking water program. And also your representative for this program, Omar. I'm sure you've met him, but just thought I'd point out that Omar Pacheco is the remedial project manager for the board on this as well. The Navy is requesting the removal of the municipal beneficial use designation from these two areas within the boundaries of our facility. None of the areas we're requesting impacts any private or public land outside of the Navy boundaries. They're in the Salt Wells Valley and the eastern portion of the Indian Wells Valley, the shallow groundwater in the Indian Wells Valley. Both of these areas meet at least one of the criteria for removal of the municipal use. Either the TDS is over 3,000 milligrams per liter, there's naturally occurring contaminants, or the production is less than 200 gallons per day. And in some cases, two or three of those apply as well. The basin plan amendment is needed, the removal of this municipal use designation, to allow the Navy to set risk-based standards for drinking water cleanup, allow us to approach our cleanup program as on a risk-based method instead of just setting standard drinking water standards. So in areas where we have poor quality water, we can take a risk-based method for other exposure scenarios such as vaporization into buildings. So these areas where it's not going to be used for drinking water, we'll look for other standards why it needs to be cleaned up and set the values based on that instead of these stricter drinking water standards in an area where the water is not going to be used for that purpose. This proposal was first included in the 2009 triennial review. We have been working with the staff to provide the information needed to move this ahead. In May of this year, we provided a technical justification report. Board staff is currently reviewing that. We expect comments back soon, and at that point, the process can accelerate and move forward. The content of that report was intended to address all of the items requested by the board and the board staff in order to complete this basin plan amendment. Also, starting in 2009, when we first began this process, we started coordination with other water producers in the area through the Indian Wells Valley Cooperative Groundwater Management Group and coordination with members of the public through our Restoration Advisory Board, which is a group of community members and cooperating agencies, regulatory agencies, who meet regularly to advise us on our restoration program and cleanup of the hazardous waste sites. And part of that coordination process is that letter that you have supporting this effort. So I've supported the members of the community, the other producers of water in the base as well, since we specifically worked with them early on to make sure that this process, which will benefit the Navy and allow us to more efficiently run our cleanup program, would not have any kind of negative effect on their water production responsibilities. So, we've been working hard on this effort, preparing that technical justification report, working with the staff on it. We just needed a bit more time to complete the process, and that's why we're asking to be included on the 2012 triennial review list as well. So, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Dr. Horn,
staff, council.
I just wanted to clarify when he was talking about meeting the criteria for de-designation. He's referring to a state water board policy on the sources of drinking water. It's 8863, and it sets out two criteria by which you can de-designate sources of drinking water from being designated as municipal sources. It does require a basin plan amendment, though it's not automatically de-designated, and that was recently upheld by a California appellate court in a case against the State Water Resource Control Board. We just got the decision.
Peter, any questions?
No, thank you very much.
Keith?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
And one further speaker card, Bill Thomas.
Never let a cowboy do anything mechanical.
I did up so much.
Mr. Chairman, members, staff, Bill Thomas, the speaking on behalf of our ranch operations in Bridgeport. We operate under the banner of Centennial Ranches and also our ranch in Mammoth under Dave Wood Ranches. The first off, I'll try to be very brief. We heard a number of related comments on the bacteria standard at your most recent meeting where you had kind of a workshop on this very issue, and a separate item where you adopted the waiver. And I just wanted to say, in case we didn't get a chance to up there, that we really appreciate the work that had been done on the waiver, a successful adoption without controversy. Your staff is to be credited, as are you as a board. And a bright distinction, frankly, for context, where, not with my rancher hat on, but with my lawyer hat on, I represent the Tulare Lake Basin in the Central Valley. And you might be aware that that revised waiver is hotly in contention in the adoption of new orders. A board meeting was held at Tulare just a week plus ago with 450 irritated ranchers. We're going farmers. That's going to reduplicate in a month or so down the road in Bakersfield. It will be more popular than Tulare. Also distinguished from the Central Coast, where I represent a number of the vegetable growers there, the Central Coast order has been highly in contention, appealed to the state board, and just yesterday, the state board issued an order, very rare order for the state board, issued a stay of 9 different provisions. In effect, the state board spanked that regional board aggressively. So you were to be congratulated with how this is going in a much different and better direction. Now to the issue. I divide this kind of into two categories. One, should this issue be prioritized? And speaking to that, the next would be which option, but leaving that second for a moment. One, this is a holdover item. It was on the prior triennial review. We have been seeking adjustment of this since about 04. Even though it was on last year's priority list, there just weren't resources enough, or commitment enough perhaps to get to it. So I think that's a factor. Also, the action on the ground in Bridgeport, not just our ranch, but the neighboring ranches, has been extraordinary. We've talked before about the array of BMPs that have been applied, and we're beyond just picking from the BMP menu. We're working with the university and your staff in respect to kind of what more additional things might be able to be added to the BMP, you know, list. I know we've talked about a ranch visit, which we hope to do in the spring. Some of that can be further pointed to, looked at then. And the water quality has improved to where, and fecal is tough to deal with because it isn't like chemistry. This is the biology and natural resources. And so it peaks and spikes and surprises you when it goes up, and sometimes it surprises you when it goes down. In large part, we have made improvements to where it's only a couple of reaches, a couple of months out of the year, that are predictably problematic, and that's where we're trying to apply some of these new techniques. A second reason, and Dr. Horn, you put your finger on it without specifically referencing this, this standard has never made any sense. Hasn't made any sense from its original adoption. We've spoken to that. We'll submit comments in writing prior to the 19th, where we'll inundate you with more of that. Apart from the 20, it was when adopted for Tahoe. There was no analysis or even thought of applying it to the agricultural waters. And as we get to the options, will point out that the low-hanging fruit is the 200. We're seeking only, you know, to go to be in conformity with all the other regional board standards they have for all waters. It's a little crazy that 200 can apply to MUN water for Sacramento, LA, San Francisco, but for some creeks in Bridgeport or other places in the region, it has to be 20 for agricultural uses. You cannot connect those dots. The importance of this and the difficult thing is you are choosing between meritorious projects. I would say ours is one of those by any number of criteria. Number one, none of this list of 20 some odd items is an immediate public health, so I don't think there's three or four of those things that are just compelling. And the board has a lot of different consideration. Certainly money, staff, priority, how long it's been there, what data do you have, are all part of that. And consequences of not doing it is also another piece. I'll be as interested as you when staff kind of struggles with and gives you some guidance. But the way the whole system works out is they really kind of haven't ever done that before, Amy. They really leave it to the judgment of the collective regional boards to make that tough decision, and it's always a tough decision. It's tough not on the project so much as it's tough to match the resource. The other reason this is important is you've heard it before, and many of board members, when this was discussed before, talked about the unenforceability of what you have there now and the need to amend this. I think these are all factors to be weighed. There's probably more. We will participate in Lake Tahoe, as you might guess. And others, I think, will there. We think this is a priority item. As far as, and I just in closing, I think alternative B is your right choice. One, you have data already for Bridgeport. You have data we've collected, the board has collected, USGS has collected, the SWAMP program have collected for many years of data. So you're armed. If anybody thought you shouldn't be doing it, you're armed with data to defend that. It's also attractive because you can do that, as has been pointed out, with a limited resource and on a short timeline. We like that. We like the short timeline. You probably like the resource commitment. But speaking, Mr. Sangel, to perhaps your question, I think that's the attractive way to do it, because then you have paved the path to make an amendment in this area. And so I don't think you're going to have to go through 8 more years of data collection when you're going to deal with Susanville, or when you're going to deal, you know, with the Owens Valley or Mammoth, which we're particularly interested in. So I think that's the attractive, you know, option. Grab the low-hanging fruit. Grab what you can. Grab what you can defend. Thank you so much.
Question from board members?
Dr.
Yeah, so assuming that the board agreed to proceeding with option 2, how would you feel about if the second phase of option 2 was developing a region-wide standard for E. coli? So basically throwing out the whole fecal coliform approach and switching to an E. coli standard. And if we see that E. coli standard coming instead, wouldn't it make sense just to do that instead of an iterative short-term fix of 200 fecal coliform units in the interim?
A few responses to that are, you as well as we have to deal with the battleground that we have before us, and that's the existing basin plan, the existing triennial review, and set that our priorities based on that. I think that further compels doing the short run low-hanging fruit approach. We have been talking to the state board, and they have been interested in amending the whole approach on bacteria standards for several years. We thought 3 or 4 years ago that was going to be soon to occur. EPA doesn't soon to do anything. And so it's been delayed. I've spent considerable time talking with Tom Howard and Chairman Hoppen at the State Board of how real that is, and we think it's pretty real. At one time, we guessed we might see it by about now. We haven't. That's no surprise. I think we may see that by early next year. What I don't know for sure is then what timeline that will be on. We're not going to see it and it immediately takes shape. So I think that we can't hesitate to do what's right now, guessing on things that are tough to guess that might intervene in that process. But speaking to that, that's another reason that we like option 2. I think before we get to the three-year timelines here, something different is going to compel us. I differ from Lori. I think that's going to come to the state board, and I think the state board is going to say, good idea, EPA. We'll apply that standard. That will apply through all our regions. And so I think you won't have to go through any lengthy process at that time. I think it's going to be dictated across the board as a statewide standard. That's my guess. Don't make any decisions based on my guess either, but that is my guess. Thank you.
Peter?
No.
Thank you.
You bet.
Well, we'll look forward to our next board meeting with the input, the matrix, we do need to go into closed session. Just before we go into closed session, I did want to invite our under introductions. We do have a state board member here. Do you have a few words to say? It's wonderful to see you.
It's great to see you. As Felicia is approaching the dais, I would just like to also say that we have an esteemed former Lahontan board member here, Dr. Eugene Nebaker, who is trying to sneak out of the room right now. It's great to see you, Gene.
Well, that's great. I don't want to take too much time because I know you have a heavy agenda all day and into the evening, but it's a pleasure to see you. It's great to see the two of you that I've met already, and Patty, I look forward to meeting the rest of you. I just want to say I am so happy that I have been named a liaison to Lahontan. It was my first choice, and I thought I would never get it, because who wouldn't want to be able to work with the board that has the most diverse, beautiful, interesting, challenging, incredible set of issues to deal with. So I look forward to getting to know you all and finding ways to be of help to all of you as you do what I think is probably the toughest job in state government, perhaps maybe just in the water world, but you all on a pittance do an incredible amount of work, and in the Lahontan region you have more work than anybody else, travel wise and different issue wise and all of that. So I want to thank you for your commitment to the water resources of the state of California, and particularly the Lahontan region. I look forward to meeting you.
Thank you. We'll go into closed session.